But you know, preachers, we make mistakes. Last week on Sunday morning, we were listening to a sermon, and there was an acrostic for fear. Now, you got to understand, in the Deep South, they don't use the E. It's you know, far. I was listening to the sermon, and he was doing F, and then, you know, I think I was thinking about a particular point, and then he was on A, and I was like, did I zone out? Did I miss E? But then it was confirmed for me that he had accidentally missed E himself. But I just told people that in the Deep South, it's far, God, and keep His commandments. You know, it's how we talk. And, you know, how to decipher that between fire is you got to use the context of the sentence. And that'll help you a lot when you're in Tennessee and Mississippi. This evening we continue our lessons on the great adventure. And we are going to look at the time of the judges. We finished up the 40 years of wandering. We saw all the idiotic things, for lack of a better term, that the Israelites did, how they constantly turned against God, how they constantly seemed to be unable to learn from the punishments that God meted out upon them. And these were not, you know, little slaps on the hands. These were plagues. These were 23,000 people dying in a single day kind of things. And yet they just didn't seem to get it. They just could not seem to get into their skulls that they needed to follow God. And you know, I hate to say, they're not going to get any better. You know, the next generation, you know, God destroyed all of that generation in the wilderness over 40 years of wandering. Everyone above the age of 20 that left the land of Egypt died, save Joshua and Caleb. God destroyed an entire generation. And unfortunately, their children did not learn either. Or they walked in the footprints of their parents. You know, when we finished a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about that Moses, even, you know, Moses, as great a leader as he was, as great a man as he was, made a mistake that cost him the ability to go into the land of Canaan. He committed a sin. He did not do what God told him to do. He did not do that in front of the people, therefore setting a bad example of disobedience in front of the people. So God did not let him enter into the land. He died on Mount Nebo after having had the opportunity to view the land before his death. Well, after Moses died, Joshua became the leader, and Joshua led them into the land, and God drove the Canaanites before them just as he promised. You know, God said, if you go into the land, I will drive them before you. I will literally drive them out. All you got to do is go in the land and be there, basically, and fight them, and you'll win. Remember the whole reason why they had to wander in the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights? Because they looked at the land, they looked at the people, said, oh, we can't beat those people. We're like grasshoppers in their sight and in our own sight. So God punished them. But now they're entering the land. Joshua's leading them. Joshua's already been a proven military leader. But that's not even important, is it? I mean, when you're dealing with God, it's not even important that you're a great military leader. You know, I would have to say that Joshua, we would consider him a great military leader because of God. You know, when he was fighting the Amalekites and they were holding up Moses' staff, that had nothing to do with the leadership of Joshua down on the battlefield. So they enter into the land, and the first place that they come to is an insurmountable. It's one of those places that I'm sure the spies saw and said, oh, that city's wall. We can't breach that, right? The city of Jericho, right there on the other side of the Jordan River, on the west bank of the Jordan River. And, you know, they had to think that. And yet God had a plan. And, you know, it had nothing to do with them. Those walls are going to fall, but it's not going to have anything to do with the Israelites building siege engines. It's not going to have anything to do with them digging tunnels under the walls. It's not going to have anything to do with anything like that. They're going to simply walk around the city for 7 days. And on the last day, they're going to walk around the city as God prescribed, and they're going to blow the trumpets and they're going to yell. They're not going to talk the rest of the way because, and by the way, that's a great example of you know, speaking where the Bible speaks. God never said they couldn't speak. God told Joshua the day in which they would speak. And so Joshua said, God didn't say we could speak on any other days. Only speak when you're told to. And they yelled and the walls fell, right? And the city was given to them. They didn't even have to hardly fight. Now we see that right there out of the gate, God is giving an example to the Israelites. Let's see here. I'm going to do it for you. I mean, it just doesn't come any plainer than that, does it? But God did have a stipulation on that battle, didn't He? That because God gave them the victory, they were not worthy of the spoils. The spoils was to be God's. They were not to take spoils from the battle as they normally would. And yet they come to a little village after the city of Jericho, a little village called Ai. I mean, you know, you got the big city of Jericho and you got this little nothing village called Ai. And they go down there and they get whooped. In fact, Joshua didn't even send very many men because he thought this was a cakewalk. And they got whooped. And it wasn't because they weren't, the Jews were not as good a fighter. It was because God was no longer fighting the battle for them. And they lost. Because one man, right? We know the story well. I won't go through it. But we know that Achan stole from the city of Jericho. He hid it in his tent. They cast lots all the way down from tribe to different sections to families, all the way down to the man. And he admitted to it. And they were stoned under a big pile of stones. And Joshua, when he went back to Ai, took a lot of the army and he won the day. Well, we also see God's hand in the battles here as they enter into the land of Canaan in the battle of Gibeon. In the battle of Gibeon, they're chasing the Canaanites, and God literally throws hailstones from the sky down upon the army and kills many of them. I mean, these guys are trying to get away. I mean, God, He doesn't want the Canaanites to survive. He doesn't want them to be around because of what we're going to see in just a moment. And so God aids them in the battle, and literally while these people are trying to escape, God is raining hailstones down upon them to destroy them. And not only that, but God, at the request of Joshua, made the sun stand still, didn't He? So they couldn't escape in darkness. So the sun froze in the sky. Now I want you to know, and I've heard this since I was a teenager, I still get things about this in my emails. There is no astronomical data that has found the lost day of Joshua, okay? That has been going around for I don't know how many years. That has been going around that somewhere in the Apollo project they found the missing day. No, they haven't. But we believe that that day did take place. That the sun did shine for the equivalent of another day. Well, the Israelites conquered most of the inhabitants of the land and divided the land up amongst the tribes, with the exception of Levi, which had a plot of land in each of the tribes' territories. Joshua gave his farewell address at 110 years old and would die just a short time after that. But he gave the people five exhortations, actually. He said, remember what you have received. Isn't that something we need to do? To always remember what we have received. You know, Dean talked about that this morning in thanking for the good things that have happened in his life, and he remembers what he has received. When we partake of the Lord's Supper, we are remembering what we have received, right? We have received the blood of Jesus Christ by a great sacrifice. So Joshua says, you need to remember what you received. God's given you this land. God delivered you from Egypt. He also said that they needed to obey the law. We need to remember to obey God's law. To always dedicate our minds to it and meditate upon it daily. He wanted them as well. Third exhortation was for them to finish the conquest of the land. They had not, at the time that Joshua was talking to them, they had not finished driving all the Canaanites out. They were to drive them all out. They were to exterminate and drive out all the inhabitants of the land. And they had not yet done that. Joshua said, finish the work. Yeah, it has something to do with our lives, doesn't it? God has told us to drive out the sin in our lives, drive out those things that we constantly have weakness in regards to push those things out. He will help us, just as He helped the Israelites. And yet it's so easy to become complacent, isn't it? When we get maybe the ones that are causing us the most problem, we kind of get those under control, we'll just kind of set back now and not get rid of them. And you know, it's just not long before the devil's knocking at the door again, hurting our lives. He also exhorted them to do not ally yourselves with the nations or intermarry with them, and don't serve their gods. Do not associate with people that will drive you away from God or pull you away from God or be a temptation for you to leave God. Paul would term it in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 is... That's going to leave me, isn't it? Evil communications corrupt good morals. See, preachers do it all the time. Evil communications corrupt good morals. You hang around, you know, as my dad told me when I was young, he said, son, you play with pigs, you get muddy. That's just the way it is. You can't run around with sin and expect to be, you know, completely immune to its effects. Then Joshua also tells them, fifth thing is to remember that God's promises never fail. God said He'll drive the people out. He will. Believe that. God said that if you obey Him, He will bless you in ways that are incredible. When you read what God promised to these people, you go, why in the world did they not follow Him? And yet, look at what God promises us today. Shouldn't we ask the same question? Why in the world do we not follow Him with all that He has promised? And then Joshua finishes with that wonderful, wonderful final question to the people. Choose you this day who you will serve. The gods of this land, the gods of the Amorites and the Amalekites and the Canaanites and Perizzites and all, will you serve those gods, the gods of Egypt? He says, well, I don't know about you. And everybody has to make their own choice to that question, right? Choose you this day whom you will serve. You have to make that choice. I have to make that choice. But Joshua says, I've already made my choice and I'll let you in on it. I'm going to serve God. As for me and my house, we will serve God. Not the gods of this land. Not the gods of this world, but the God of the universe. And you know, the people that day, it looked so good. You know, sometimes you really have hope for these if you just didn't know the whole story. Sometimes I think if you were just reading this kind of like a novel and you didn't know the whole story, you would be going, oh, this is looking good. Because the people go, oh, forbid from us to serve the gods of this land. We will serve God. And you think, yeah. Oh, how short that kind of enthusiasm lasts. Because we begin the book of Judges, and it covers most of the period of the time of the Judges. However, the period of the Judges themselves, not the book of Judges, but the time in which Judges were ruling the land will extend beyond the book of Judges into the book of 1 Samuel, because Samuel will be the final judge, and he will continue to be a judge until the time in which Saul is made king over Israel. And this time frame covers a little more than 400 years of Bible history. And we know many of the characters, don't we? We know Gideon. We know Deborah. We know characters such as Samson, Eli, Samuel. And there are some others that we don't know so well, but have interesting stories as well, like Ehud, the left-handed swordsman, who had his sword on his right leg, and they didn't search that leg because they didn't figure he'd be left-handed. He killed King Eglon. He was a very, you know, kids always kind of get a kick out of that story because he was a very fat king. And when he ran the sword in, the fat came down over and he couldn't pull it back out. Very interesting stories, kind of interesting in the sense of what the Bible tells you in regards to them. But I'm not going to cover this book or any of the events in detail. The simple truth is that all the events in the book of Judges have a common cause. There is a cause and effect throughout the book of Judges, and it's the same cause, has the same effect over and over and over again. The events in the book of Judges are very repetitive. There's a constant cycle of the book, and it goes like this. Israel goes into idolatry. We'll talk about why they go into idolatry in just a moment. But as a result of going into idolatry, they are enslaved by God, using the nations that they should have run out of the land. Kind of, if you'd have done your job, they wouldn't be enslaving you right now. But God would enslave them. And over time of that enslavement, sometimes many years of enslavement, the people would become sorrowful. They don't like being enslaved. No one would like being enslaved. And they would become sorrowful, and they would begin to cry out to God to save them. They have that image of God as a panic button, that when life gets bad, I'll turn to God. And that's really what you see from the Israelites. So they call out to God. God being the loving God that He is, that David proclaimed Him to be. David said, "Let me fall into the hands of God because He is merciful." He would send a judge. And He would deliver them from the enslavement that He had placed upon them. And they would be free, and for a short period of time, usually somewhere in the 30 to 40 year range, they would do okay. But then things would go bad again. We'd start the cycle all over again. You know, the single cause for this cycle is that the people were constantly doing what was right in their own eyes. That's where they failed. That's the singular cause that the book of Judges lays out there for us. And yet it is the reason for every time that they go into enslavement by God. Every time that they are being punished by God, it is because they have decided to do what is right in their own eyes. The book of Judges twice will say, "And each man did what was right in his own eyes." Folks, that's a terrible mistake to make in your life. You know, the book of Judges begins with God condemning the people for not following through on removing the people from the land. The people had ignored Joshua's warnings. They had ignored Joshua's exhortations to finish what they had started, to finish the removal of the Canaanites from the land. And yet, there is a list there of why they didn't and when they didn't. They allied with some. They let some continue to live but be taxed. They just didn't go fight some. They had just decided, we have enough land for our homes, for our farms, so that we can settle down. Who wants to keep fighting? We'll settle now and just be happy where we're at. We will leave the rest of these people that God commanded us to get out of the land out. I mean, let them remain in the land in some form or fashion. And God condemns them for that. They did this because they were lazy. They did this because somewhere in their hearts, they thought they knew better. And that's just another way of saying they did what they thought was right in their own eyes. This looks good to me. I think we can handle this now. We've got these people pretty well subjugated. It's not exactly what God asked for, but it's close enough. Let me tell you what, we better not operate in close enough with God. Let me tell you what, my own mother wouldn't take close enough, and I'm certainly not going to begin to think God will. God expects exactly what He says, not something close to it. We need to give Him that. Well, this initial action of doing what they thought would work led to 400 years of great difficulty because, see, you've got to understand, God was driving those people out for a purpose. It wasn't that God just hated the Canaanites or He just wanted to see them dead. He wanted them gone because He knew that if they remained in the land, that they would do exactly what they're going to do. Exactly what we read in Scriptures them doing, and that is lead the Israelites into constant idolatry. If you leave, see, play with the pigs, right? If you leave them with the pigs, they're going to get muddy, and that's exactly what they did. And that's what led to all of their pain and heartache. That's what led to this constant cycle in the book of Judges. It's going to be what is a continuous problem all the way to the time that both the northern and the southern kingdom are destroyed and sent into captivity. Idolatry from these people is going to be the cause. And it goes back to one singular act of laziness, of not doing what God had said to do. Listen to what God says in Judges 2, 1 through 4. Folks, God, there are consequences for sin. And God will let you suffer them if you want to do it. Romans chapter 1, God says, or Paul says, that God turned them over to a reprobate mind to do that which was unclean, to receive the recompense of their evil doing. Sin has negative effects. And it's going to for these people. Listen to what God says. Remember, God said, "I will drive them out." No more. "Now the angel of the Lord came from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, 'I brought you up out of Egypt and led you into the land which I have sworn to your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And as for you, you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land,'" which he's already listed previous to this statement, them doing that. "Shall I make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land? You shall tear down their altars, but you have not obeyed me. And then you get one of those Garden of Eden questions, don't you? What is this you have done? God doesn't need to know the answer to that. That's really a question for them to think about. You know, they need to contemplate the answer to that question. What is this that you have done? Therefore, I also said, I will not drive them out before you. And he goes on to say this. Not only will he just no longer, I mean, you know, some of the people probably hear that statement and go, well, that's fine. We didn't want to go find them anyway. You know, that's okay, God. We're happy. He's not done. I will not drive them out before you, but they will become as thorns in your sides, and they will be, their gods will be a snare to you. It's not a good thing. They're going to cause you constant pain and difficulty because you didn't do what you need to do. Folks, if we don't do what we need to do in regards to tending to our faith, it's going to cause pain. It's going to bring difficulty. It says, when the angel of the Lord spoke these words to all the sons of Israel, the people lifted up their voices and wept. Oh, these people, I tell you what, they could cry at the drop of a bucket, couldn't they? Whenever things just didn't get their way. Remember last time, our last lesson, we talked about they were all hanging out in their tents crying at the door. And they got to the spies, told them that they couldn't take the land. And then God said, that's fine, you're not going to go into the land. They all cried. Now, there's a point in which tears will not matter. The book of Hebrews says that Esau, though he wept bitterly, would not receive the blessing because he sold it for a bowl of soup. He gave it up for nothing. And these people have given up what God has promised to them for nothing more than the ease of life and their own wisdom. So once again, we see them suffering irreversible consequences here as a result of their disobedience. And there are irreversible consequences to disobedience for us today as well. You know, their inaction to remove the Canaanite people would lead to their being influenced by their paganism. And they would constantly turn to the gods of these Canaanites. That's why God wanted them gone. Right in their own eyes is a mindset that replaces God's will with our own. Putting our own will in the place of God. Not my will, but thy will be done, Father. It's not thy will, but my will be done, Father. Kind of attitude. And in our world today, we can see the same mindset. Humanism, atheism, relativism are all people doing what is right in their own eyes. Functioning from their own intellect. Things that believe that human intellect is the pinnacle of thought and achievement. Such a thought process removes God from His rightful place as Creator and ruler of all. Examples of people doing what is right in their own eyes today is abortion. Oh, it's not murder. You know, what God says it is. It's what man has determined in his great wisdom. It reminds me of Romans 1 again, right? That the wisdom of men, they became fools when they thought they were so smart. And yet they were such fools in the eyes of God. It's a choice. It just makes sense. A woman should be able to choose. So I'm going to do what's right in my own wisdom. What I think is right. You're going to find, just like the Israelites, people that believe that are going to find that it's not acceptable. Homosexuality is not immorality. It's a lifestyle. They love each other. It's love. Why can't that be okay? Because God said it's not. That's not Nathan. I don't hate homosexuals. I don't dislike them. In fact, I love some to a great degree. But it doesn't change what is right. And just coming to some kind of idea or wisdom in my own mind or in society's mind that it's okay doesn't make it okay. No more than it made it okay when the Israelites did what was right in their eyes. Greed. Oh, it's not selfishness anymore. It's just the way to succeed, right? It's not something that destroys others so that you can have more. It's just so everybody can make it their own way, however they can make it. Alcohol, it's not drunkenness, it's fun and it's cool. You just watch the commercials and you'll see. Watch television today and you'll see. It's fun, it's cool. It's not right. Pornography, that's not sexual perversion, is it? That's a First Amendment right. Isn't that what they're arguing these days? We should be able to put pictures of 12-year-old girls on the thing because I have a First Amendment right to express myself in some perverted manner and it'd be all right. It's right in some people's eyes. It's not right in God's. And it will never be. Embryonic stem cell research, not mass genocide. It's a potential cure. Same potential cure that fetal tissue offered in the 80s in which not one single medical treatment came from. It's a potential cure so we can work it out in our own minds to do it. To do things that are heinous and awful. You know, we need to look to God. The lesson of the book of Judges is ultimately what Jeremiah chapter 10 and verse 23 says. That it's not within me to guide my own steps. To look in through my own eyes and try to determine what is right and is wrong is going to lead me down the path of the Israelites of constant failure and constant falling away from God. It just won't work. I'm too stupid. I need God. You know, there's a reason, isn't there, that David wrote Psalm 23 and basically calls himself a sheep? Sheep are stupid. I mean, I've talked to shepherds. They said they're stupid. If you don't guide them to everything, if you don't lead them around, they don't know where to go. Folks, that's us. The Lord is my shepherd. I'm a sheep. That means I don't have a clue what I'm doing. And let me tell you, when I was doing it on my own and not following the shepherd, I made a right good mess of my life, didn't I? But I follow the one. And I do what is right in His eyes. Things are better. I'm led to pastures that are green, that can fill me. Calm waters that can restore me. I can go through valleys of deep darkness, the difficult times in life, and never fear because His rod and staff, they comfort me. I'm a sheep. It's not my eyes that's going to get me anywhere, but the eyes of the shepherd. May you follow His eyes tonight. We can assist you in any way in coming to the good shepherd, as Jesus called Himself in John chapter 10. The shepherd that knows His sheep. The shepherd that will do all that He can to take care, to protect, and to bring His sheep home. You have that opportunity to come to Him tonight. We can assist you in any way. Won't you let us, as we stand, as we sing.